Well, today's the day, isn't it? What do I mean by that? Well, it could mean different things to different people. What is important to you today is probably what you have on your mind, and if you were looking forward to that, then when that day comes, whatever an event might be, you think, well, today's the day. I'm going to leave that thought right there. We'll finish it up a little later on. There is a thought that has puzzled mankind for thousands of years. Those who believe in God and those who believe that Christ is coming again and that the world will be burned up. And that is, when will that happen? When will the end of time, as we know time, actually be? Well, there's a real simple answer, and we got it from Jesus Christ in Matthew 24 and verse 36. He says, "Of that day and hour no one knows, not even the angels of heaven, but my Father only. Christ himself does not know." And the thought has occurred to me that God may not even know, because he may not have a day set yet. It may just be, and I think it will be, when he has had enough of sin, of this world. When that time comes, that'll be the end of time as we know it. And events will happen. But the important thing is, if you are a Christian, if you are a child of God, it really doesn't matter when the end of time is. If you're ready, now does it? In fact, we're told to look forward to that if we're saved. And wouldn't a Christian who is besieged by the things of the world that we live in today, shouldn't we look forward to that day? But I'd like to spend a little time this morning thinking about those who are not a child of God. Those who have not yet accepted what God has given us freely, and the sacrifice that Christ gave for us all freely. When will the end of time be for those who are lost? Well, will it be when they die? Or if they're still alive, will it be when Christ returns? Well, sure. That definitely would be the end of time for them, wouldn't it? But, you know, I think that time usually comes far before that. If you'll follow my thoughts a little bit. For those who have rejected Christ, they may think it really doesn't matter to them. At least that's what they that's how they live. But the end of their time is when they reach a point where they have rejected God to where they will never consider repenting or obeying Him. Think about that for a minute. If that point in time comes for someone when they're 15, when they're 20, when they're 30, when they're 40, whenever, and they have drifted so far that they never consider God anymore as needing God, their time's gone. And actually, they might as well be dead, physically dead, if they will never consider Him again. We certainly see people who come to God in the later stages of their life. And we know that that's a wonderful thing. Obviously, there was still some hope for those people. But for many people of the world, and I would say most people that have lived on this planet, that is not the case. My personal thought, and you may agree or you may disagree with this, is that though most of the people who have been exposed to the true God, and I would say everyone in this room this morning has, this time when they decide that this incident comes for them when they're pretty young, and that is, we might call that the age of accountability, when I realize I've sinned, I'm old enough to understand I've done things that are wrong, and I need to do something about it, and there is a God, and I can't save myself, but then if I don't do anything about it, and that's what I'm talking about, if I don't do anything about it, I find a reason not to obey, then I become comfortable with rejecting God. And, you know, there's probably as many different reasons for this as you might want to think about, but they're all unacceptable, of course. And I have just a few, mainly three things I want to give you to consider about why people might not obey God. And the first would be procrastination. We all know it's easy to put off something and not do it today. And many of us do not do things until we absolutely are forced to do things because of a deadline. And if you are or have ever been a boss or a supervisor, if you have ever supervised people, you know if you want to get them to do something, you have to give them a deadline. It's very rare that you have people who will have enough initiative to do things on their own and not have to have a deadline to finish them. They're called, in a nice way, a self-starter. Or if you don't do that, instead of being called a procrastinator or some evil, horrible word, they're called, well, they're not a self-starter. What are you laughing at, Clayton? You know what I'm talking about. And this person who is young might think, well, I'm young. I've got lots of time. I've got my whole life ahead of me. Right now, I'm busy. I'm in school. I'm playing ball. I've got recreation. I'm involved in clubs at school. I'm in college. I'm trying to get my degree. I have a job. You know, if you're going to move up the ladder, you've got to be totally dedicated to your job. That really comes first. Well, I've got my children. I have to take care of my children. Of course we do. But what is the order? Jesus told us, gave us the order in Matthew, the 6th chapter, in verse 33. He said, "Seek ye first the kingdom of God and His righteousness." And all these earthly things that we think we need, they'll be supplied. We'll get those. God will give them to us if we seek Him first. That involves trust. Trust in God. Jesus gave His disciples and all those who were listening a parable in the 25th chapter of Matthew. And we commonly call that the parable of a wedding or a parable of the 10 virgins. And these virgins were men, young men, not women. And this was in that period of time, the bridegroom would select probably his closest friends to be with him at his wedding. And the custom was they would wait for him to show up and then they would all join him at the wedding. Well, this wedding that Jesus talked about most surely was at night because they all brought a lamp. And lamps burn oil to give light. Well, five of them brought oil. And they were smart enough to know that their lamp might go out before the bridegroom showed up, so they brought more oil. Five of them did not bring more oil, extra oil. Was it because they weren't smart enough to know? Probably not. They probably did know that they might run out. But what was their thinking? Well, I don't know. Maybe they thought, well, I'll just borrow some from so-and-so, he's there. He'll have enough. He'll take care of me. Or I'll just, whatever the case may be, their rationale was they did not bring extra oil. Well, it took the bridegroom quite some time to show up. And so their lamps all went out. But the ones who brought spare oil filled their lamps and kept their lamps lit. So when the bridegroom came, the five who had no oil, their lamps had gone out. What happened to them? They were shut out of the wedding. They were locked out. They could not get in. Jesus likens this to those who obey, those who do not obey Him. An important verse I want to bring out today is verse 13 of chapter 25. He says, "Watch, therefore, for you know neither the day nor the hour in which the Son of Man is coming." Don't put off. Don't procrastinate. There is no good reason for that. If you think about your daily duties, things that you do, and you think about things that you put off and you put off and you put off, is there really a good reason that you put them off? There may be something else more important that comes up that you have to do first in our daily lives. But when it comes to God, nothing is more important. So we really cannot procrastinate. Here's another thing I thought about. We see this a lot today in the news or around us. There are people who blame other people for their situation in life. Or in other words, there are those in the church, there are those out of the church who have a problem with someone else. And because they feel wounded, and maybe they are rightfully wounded, maybe someone did do something wrong to them, maybe that person is at fault for their state in life. If so, God will judge the offender. And He's also going to judge me if I'm the one that's been offended. Each person, each of us are still responsible to work out our own salvation. Philippians 2 and 12. I have to take responsibility for my life whether I've been wronged or not. And so do you. How sad is it that, and we see not only a person, but we see whole families leave the church. Or whole families not come to the church because one member of that family has been mistreated. It's sad that people can't rise above that sometimes, isn't it? Think about this. Was Christ wrongfully accused? Sure He was. To the point of death. And yet, He was obedient to His Father. The cry today that we hear in the world we live in, "I'm a victim. Somebody treated me wrong." And because of that, God's not going to hold me personally responsible. Now, if you're my age and you watch an old Western now and then on MeTV, that's a channel we get around here, you're besieged with commercials about different diseases that you may have got. Or you may have been mistreated by a doctor. Call this number and sue this doctor. $30 billion has been set aside for you. Call right now. Y'all know what I'm talking about. That's the mentality that the world tries to push on us. Will that money? Let's say that I did get cancer or some other disease from spraying Roundup, glyphosate. Yeah, I use that, and a lot of you do too. Maybe that did cause non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. Let's say I get $1 million. Is that going to make me well again? Is that going to make me whole again? No. We need to understand that whether we're a victim or not, we are responsible. And if we are a Christian, we will suffer for the cause of Christ. One more reason, unacceptable reason people don't accept God. We have many people in our society who believe or try to convince themselves that there is no God and there's no life after death. Many of our scientists and so-called educators are in this category. Our universities and colleges are full of them. I've heard many young Christians talk about the shock that they got when they went to college. How those teaching just attack them for believing in God. They will go to any extreme to try to find out if life could have, maybe, possibly, existed on another planet or has evolved on this planet from any other source than creation by God. They have a problem, though. They have a problem with that. Because true science does not lie, and true science is in alignment with the Bible. And true science continues to give us medical, scientific, and archaeological discovery after discovery. And with that, with those discoveries comes the proof, time after time, that the Bible is true. God has already told us that. But people shut their eyes, and then when they make these discoveries, on rare occasion you will read about a scientist who simply could not live the lie any longer and said, yes, there has to be a God. There is a God. Things are all in order, and there is no chance these things could have all happened by chance. I believe, and I agree with Eric. Last week he talked about abortion. And I absolutely agree and have thought for a long time that life does begin at conception. And we have passages of Scripture in the Bible that show us that life does exist long before we are born, before we are come out of the womb. If God is willing, through science, I think that will be shown. I think there's a very good possibility that dinosaur bones and human bones will someday be excavated together, showing that they lived, humans and dinosaurs lived at the same time. You don't have to be a rocket scientist to know that they did if you believe the earth is 6,000 years old. God created them on the same day. Day 6. If these things sound unrealistic to you, think what your grandparents or some of you that are younger, your great-grandparents would have thought, say, 100 years ago, if they had been told there's going to be a man walk on the moon. When you go out at night and you see that full moon, when you see a real full moon and you look at it through a pair of binoculars or a telescope, it really looks close to you, doesn't it? And to think that human beings have actually walked there. Well, guess what? In 20 days from now, that's been 50 years ago. July 20, 1969 was the day Neil Armstrong stepped on the moon. 20 days from now, that's been 50 years ago. God, how did we do that? God gave us the knowledge and the ability to. I'd like to read a passage or two for you from 2 Peter chapter 3, verses 5 through 7. This passage is talking about those who deny Christ, there is a God, or that Christ is returning. For this they willfully forget that by the word of God the heavens were of old, and the earth standing out of water and in the water, by which the world that then existed perished, being flooded with water. That's the great flood, of course. But the heavens and the earth, which are now preserved by the same word, are reserved for fire until the day of judgment and perdition of ungodly men. God created the world. He destroyed all life on it except for 8 souls by water, and He will completely destroy it at the end of time. Go to verse 10. But the day of the Lord will come as a thief in the night, in which the heavens will pass away with a great noise, and the elements will melt with fervent heat. Both the earth and the works that are in it will be burned up. Therefore, since all these things will be dissolved, what manner of persons ought you to be in holy conduct and godliness, looking for and hastening the coming of the day of God, because of which the heavens will be dissolved, being on fire, and the elements will melt with fervent heat. Nevertheless, we, according to His promise, look for new heavens and a new earth in which righteousness dwells. Makes reference there in verse 12, what I said earlier. Christians look forward to either the day of their death, if they are, especially if they are old and sick. And we are to look forward to the end of time. And why? Because all of the trials and tribulations will be over. So, leaving these thoughts, what do we know about the end of time? And I'm talking now about when Christ returns, the judgment. I'm not talking about necessarily the end of our life, but I am talking about the end of creation. Well, we know quite a few things. We've been given quite a few things, and I'll just mention some of them, certainly not all of them, but in Matthew, the 24th chapter, verses 30, 31, and 44, Jesus said, "The Son of Man will appear in heaven, and all the tribes of the earth will mourn, and they will see the Son of Man coming on the clouds of heaven with power and great glory. And He will send His angels with the great sound of a trumpet, and they will gather together His elect from the four winds, from one end of heaven to the other. Therefore, you also be ready, for the Son of Man is coming at an hour you do not expect." He's going to come in a split second. His angels will go throughout the earth and gather the saved. We know that all bodies will rise from the graves. Those who are dead in the sea will come up from the seas. Those who are righteous will meet Him in the air. 1 Corinthians 15, verses 51 through 53 gives us more information. And there's a thought here I'd like to... This is kind of a sidebar. You might want to, just something for you to think about. In that passage it says, "He will come with 10,000s of His saints." I don't have the answers to all of this. But think about it. Who will those saints be? Is there a particular group? We know that in Ecclesiastes 3 and 21 and 12 and 7, Solomon said, when we die, our body, physical body, returns to the dust. What happens to the spirit and the soul? It returns to God who gave it. This is kind of back on what Eric talked about last week also. Think of all the souls of the millions of babies that have been aborted. Think of all the souls of the children who have been born and have died of starvation, wars, disease, and never reached an age where they knew about God. There's millions, hundreds probably of millions since the beginning of time. Think about the babies that were sacrificed by their parents in fire. We read about this in the Bible, but that's a practice of many nations that has occurred for centuries, thousands of years. Will they be part of those 10,000s of saints? I don't know. But I know they're saved. In a split second, all those who have not obeyed God will realize whatever their rationale was for not needing to obey God, it's now cost them an eternity of punishment. Not only will they not be with God, they will be in torment with Satan and his wicked angels in the lake of fire and darkness. You know that if you think about hell and the place, the lake of fire, sometimes we may fail to think about that it's dark, pitch dark, and you are alone. Whoever is there is alone, and they are separated from God. Their only hope of getting out. And then hope is gone. There is no hope. Hope is over with. In Isaiah 45:23, Romans 14:11-12, and Philippians 2, verses 9 through 11, we're told every knee will bow and every tongue will confess that Jesus Christ is Lord to the glory of the Father. This is at the end of time, when Christ returns. Every person who has ever drawn a breath will bow. We know in Revelations 20, verses 10 through 15. Let me turn to that. We have information in the last 2 to 3 chapters of Revelation about the end of time. See if I got enough voice left here. verse 10. The devil who deceived them was cast into the lake of fire and brimstone where the beast and the false prophet are, and they will be tormented day and night forever and ever. Verse 12. I saw the dead, small and great, standing before God, and books were opened. And another book was opened, which is the book of life. And the dead were judged according to their works by the things which were written in the books. We'll be judged by what we have done. We will answer to God. The sea gave up the dead who were in it, and death and Hades delivered up the dead who were in them, and they were judged each one according to his works. Then death and Hades were cast into the lake of fire. This is the second death. And anyone not found written in the book of life was cast into the lake of fire. We know that those who are God's, those who are Christ, will have his name on their foreheads. That is symbolic. Of course, we will not have the body we have now, but it is a spiritual body. But in some way, we will be identified by Christ with his name. And Jesus warns us 3 times in the closing chapter of the Revelation to John, Revelations 22, verses 7, 12, and 20. He says, he repeats something 3 times. And you know what it is. Behold, I am coming quickly. What does that mean? It means soon. And when I do come, it's too late for repentance. It's too late for forgiveness from God. It's too late then for those who have either procrastinated or don't believe. They will believe then. For those who have blamed other people and played the victim card, it'll be too late then. So, back to my opening statement. Today is the day. What day is it? 2 Corinthians 6 and 2 says, behold, now is the day of salvation. For all of those who are here today, it's not too late yet. That's the great news. It's not too late to obey God. And yes, that certainly applies to anyone who has not accepted Him, been baptized, and become a member of His church. But it also is for those who have done that and then left Him. You still have time to come back if you need to. Today is the day of salvation. There is no reason at all for not obeying Christ. It's free. It's our only hope. So this morning, as you think about those things, remember, today is the day. Whatever you have planned, it's not as important as your salvation. Let's take care of our priorities first. If we can help you in any way, please let us know as we stand and sing our closing song.